Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take some minutes to talk with you about the emerald ash borer. It's been in Wisconsin since I think it was 2008. And since then, we've had millions of dollars spent for tree removal and replacement. And we want to talk about some of the latest efforts to combat this invasive insect. And our guest to do it, Paul Segan, a DNR forest health specialist, works out of Hayward and has an update for us. And as we talk with Paul, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about the emerald ash borer? Maybe there's some other issues. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Paul, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Larry. Thanks again.
You were with us in May, and you predicted that soon the emerald ash borer would be in every county of Wisconsin. And has that happened? Give us an update.
Yes. Yes. We spoke back in early June at Bayfield and Bloom, and the prediction has come to fruition this year, Larry. We now have EAB detection in all 72 of Wisconsin counties. And the reason I thought we'd reach that threshold is because we did have quite a bit of an uptick in the last 2 years in county-level detections. We've probably added 5 to 7 counties in the last couple of years. So it's really increased as to the rate of new county detections. And it's likely that EAB was in all 72 of our counties prior to this year, simply because it tends to arrive and infest an area much sooner, several years, maybe 5 years typically, before we start to see symptoms and it reaches a detection threshold. So big year in EAB news this year. We've got that milestone, the all 72 counties, but we've also had EAB in Wisconsin now for about 20 years. I know technically we've got the 2008 year noted as the first EAB detection down in the southeast, Ozaukee and Washington counties. But looking at some dendrochronology and tree ring analysis suggests it probably was here since 2004. We just had missed it because of that difficulty in detecting it. So probably around the 20-year anniversary it took to get across this entire state here.
It's
big news.
Well, maybe probably worth it to explain what the invasive insect does to ash trees.
Yeah, so this is a type of insect that we call a wood borer, and it kills a tree when the adults lay eggs onto typically the outer branches of the upper portions of an ash tree. All of our native ash trees are susceptible, the green, black, and white ash. We also have a fourth species in Wisconsin, a much smaller component of the overall forest called blue ash. It shows some resistance to EAB. But in any event, these adult females will lay their eggs on the upper portions of the branches. Initially, those eggs hatch into small, what we call larvae. They're little worm-like creatures that bore into the stem, the twig, and they start to feed underneath the bark on the phloem. And what that does is it causes disruption in the water flow and nutrient movement in the tree. And over the course of anywhere from 2 to 5 years, the tree ends up dying from this dysfunction caused in its conductive tissue. And usually the young larva will regenerate into an adult in about a year's time. Sometimes it takes 2 years, depending on the location, north or south in the state, and depending on the local weather in a given year, a couple of years. But generally, we see a one-year life cycle from egg to adult in most of Wisconsin. Hmm. And that leads to pretty quick mortality when EAB starts to get into one of these ash stands.
Oh, man. The tree's not going to live very long.
No, typically what we see is within 2 to 5 years, the tree will be killed by EAB. And it depends on a few factors. We do see a little bit of variability in the species of ash as to how soon they're killed after initial infestation, whereby our white ashes are a little bit slower to die. Green ashes are very quick to die. It is probably more like a 3-year turnover from an introduction to mortality. And then our black ash is quite quick. It can be 2 years. And it sort of depends on how high the EAB population is in an area. initially when the insect arrives into a new area, whether it is introduced by firewood movement or log movement by us, it will take longer. It'll take maybe 5 years before it kills an individual tree. But once that population establishes and we're like 5 years into the introduction at a site, the population of EAB is much higher and more of them will attack an individual tree, and we'll start to see that death rate increase quite quickly. And that's where we get down to maybe 2 years in some cases to take out an entire, could be a very large tree, a 30 inch diameter type of tree will die in just about 2 years.
Yeah. Can I kind of always tell which trees are ash trees anymore around here when in the spring, when everybody else's, all the other trees are leafing out well, you can pick those ash trees out because they're not.
Chris, yeah, you can, and that's a good point, Larry. Getting into those symptoms, what you would expect to see to recognize trees as being killed by EAB or having symptoms of EAB infestation. And typically what we talk about are when we see canopy or crown thinning, leaves of an ash tree that look a little bit stunted in size, a little smaller, the crown looks a little bit more diffuse, you can see through it a little bit better. Also sometimes a little bit of lime greenness to the leaves, a little bit of discoloration and lighter green color. And then of course the branch dieback, where we're starting to miss leaves in the outer foot to several feet of those upper branches. That's often indicative that we've got some EAB infestations. There's some other things that can cause that dieback, but EAB is a fairly reliable fairly reliable guess if you're seeing that. And of course, we see a lot of woodpecker activity after a couple of years of a tree being infested. The woodpeckers will start to try to forage, feed for those larvae underneath the bark and peck away the bark, leaving kind of a lighter color to the bark. We call it blonding. And then some of these epicormic sprouts can start to develop off of the main stem. They usually these spindly sprouts that come off the main stem and then eventually cracks in the bark. And if you're lucky enough, you get maybe the gold standard of signs of the pest in the tree, and that's the D-shaped exit hole. That we usually don't see until the very kind of final year that the tree's alive, but it's going to have that D-shaped exit hole where the adult beetle has developed underneath the bark, and it then exits the tree and leaves behind that kind of signature shape of its head, which is kind of a D-shaped. So those are kind of what we would look for down in the southeast and some parts of even middle of Wisconsin in the central sands. The amount of mortality is just staggering. It's where you see an ash forest, you just see dead crowns of trees, completely lifeless among what is often an understory of green vegetation underneath it, but these old relics and skeletons of trees. It's really quite sad.
It is. Christina in Glenwood City has a question, I believe, relating to ash. Let's go there. Christina, hi.
Hi there. Thank you. I live in St. Croix County. I have beautiful ash trees that follow the curve of my driveway, and I trim them in the winter. However, we do have some limbs that are long and interfering with mowing. Should I wait to trim those, or is it safe to do so now?
I would generally wait to trim. With all trees, whether it's a pine or it's a deciduous tree, you're going to get usually a little bit better response if you wait until the dormant period to do pruning. If it's a deciduous tree, you're going to see better how to prune the branch as far as the structure goes. You won't have all the leaves to contend with, so you can kind of target and see where to prune easier. And then the other thing is there's just not as many pests or diseases that can be problematic and invade those wound sites created when you prune. So waiting until the first couple of frosts is a safer bet. What I would say, though, too, if you're going to be investing in your ash tree, whether it's just some sweat equity at the homeowner level that you're going to do with your ash, or hire an arborist to do some thinning or pruning of the ash, is to really think about whether or not you want to save the ash and use some protective insecticide. It won't generally make a whole lot of sense right now to invest much effort into an ash tree unless it's going to be protected with insecticide, simply because it's going to end up getting killed most likely anyway. And so I would make that first determination. Is this a tree I really want to keep around? And if it is, look at some of the insecticide options and then invest in some of your time and effort or get some professional assistance with pruning.
Yeah, that whole business with the insecticides, those are injected into the soil, or how do they work? What are the treatments?
Yeah.
Maybe we should just talk about treatments in general for this, but...
Yeah, this is a really important component of EAB management, both in the municipal areas, urban types of areas, but also people who live in much of Wisconsin's rural area who might have a very nice yard ash tree that they want to protect. And the first thing to really think about is, does the tree meet kind of the criteria that would cause you to want to invest in it? Does it have a good shape? Is it located in the yard where it provides some nice shade? Does it mitigate some of the potential stormwater effects? Most trees would. So asking yourself those questions and then thinking about the financials involved in it too. If you have a tree that's an ash tree that's under 15 inches in diameter, there are some really good homeowner-based products that can be used to protect ash trees. These homeowner products are typically what's called drenches that are mixed with water at rates listed on the label, poured onto the soil at usually during the growing season, typically May through September. They'll then percolate into the root zone and be taken up through the roots by the tree and provide that kind of systemic protection in the tree. So the tree kind of indirectly receives the herbicide or the insecticide while you sort of fertilize it on the ground. If trees are bigger than 15 inches in diameter, or folks want to get longer time periods of protection, say 2 to 3 years, it's usually recommended to go with an arborist-based type of product. And a really good one that we recommend we know is very effective is emamectin benzoate. That's the chemical name of a product that provides between 2 to 3 years of protection. The difference in this, though, this is not a soil drench that you'd mix with water and pour around the base of the tree. This is injected with a set of tubes that go into the tree at various points around the root flare and are taken up by the tree system over the course of an hour to several hours, and they're generally done by an arborist. A little bit more expensive treatment, but provides a longer-term type of protection. When we're getting to that 15-inch diameter range, trees that big really probably need to have that arborist-grade injection just so that you get adequate coverage throughout so much of that tissue of the tree.
It's probably going to vary a little bit in terms of the cost for that emamectin benzoate, but application of that... what's the price range for something like that? And we're talking every 3 years, probably.
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's going to vary based on the market someone's in for their arborist. But I guess recently I talked to an arborist in my area in Northwest Wisconsin doing injections, and I think it was about $15 per diameter inch. So if you multiply that out, $15 diameter inch, you can kind of figure what that cost is going to be. And that's just a crude estimate. A homeowner product for, say, a tree that's 10 inches using one of those kind of annual-based treatments you have to treat every year, that's going to be around that $25 to probably $35 mark based on recent data. So, yeah, definitely going to be more expensive. But then you have to factor, you're going to get probably just a little bit better protection with the arborist treatment, and you're not going to have to do it as often.
Yeah, so if you're looking at 15 inches, that's in the neighborhood of $200 or a little over $200, I guess. So maybe figuring you're spending $70 a year or so to protect that tree, which, you know, I'd certainly, if I had a nice ash tree, I'd be willing to spend $70 a year on average to keep it there.
Yeah, and there's a couple other things, too, there to think about, Larry, is that, well, if you don't treat, of course, the tree is eventually going to get killed.
Yeah.
Could be a matter of a year or two, or it could be 5 years, but it's not going to be that long. This pest is so effective. And so then you have to balance the removal and replanting costs up against the treatment costs. So that's another factor. And removals are quite expensive. Oftentimes, if the tree is, say, 15 inches in diameter, that could be $1,000 removal, roughly, depending on the market. But yeah, it's very expensive. So I think about that too.
Paul Segan, our guest, DNR Forest Health Specialist. He's working out of Hayward. We're talking with him about emerald ash borer right now, and I think he could take some other tree-related questions as well. And you can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. Talking with Paul Segan today, DNR Forest Health Specialist, works out of Hayward. Great to have him back to talk about emerald ash borer, and we can take some other tree-related questions as well with him. So great to have him along. Is there any good news on stopping emerald ash borer? I mean, all right, we can do the emametin benzoate, and but is there there any way we can get rid of the borer?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, Larry. And it turns out there is some bright spots when we look at the overall integrated pest management with a pest like EAB. Now, let's back up for a second and think about this. EAB got here roughly 2004, spread across all 72 counties in just that 20-year time frame. And now most of the counties south of, say, Highway 29 have substantial amount of mortality and dieback. And so this really has been the most impactful and significant tree killing pest that most of us have seen in our career and frankly in the history of the U.S. In recent times. So it's really dramatic, but the good news is that we are seeing a lot of these young ash down in the southeast in particular start to reach seed bearing age now, and they are producing a production of seed, and the seed is growing into a new cohort of trees. So we have that. So we have some natural reproduction on the landscape. Secondly, we have been introducing non-stinging parasitoid wasps here in the state for the last roughly 10 years, about three different species. And these have a good impact on reducing the EAB population carrying capacity once the initial wave of mortality has gone through. And so the hope is that once we've reached in all counties this kind of post-EAB mortality wave where most of the ash have been killed and the pest really declines in population, we will have enough of these biocontrol wasps that sort of track onto the population and keep EAB's population at a much lower level, allowing some of that ash regeneration to continue to reach seed-bearing age and produce seed to keep and perpetuate ash on the landscape. Meanwhile, we are doing some things to look at just how can we sort of really be proactive with getting some resistant phenotypes of ash on the landscape. And so what we're doing right now at the DNR is using satellite imagery to identify areas that have long been impacted by EAB, like down in the southeast, and look for these rare individuals of ash that have survived the initial wave of mortality and are still living. We call these lingering ash. These trees might hold the key to some of the resistance genes that is naturally occurring within the various ash species populations. If we can find these individuals, these lingering ash, and collect their seed, we have a secondary program that's looking at collecting that seed and testing it against EAB by introducing seed of EAB onto these growing trials of seedlings and seeing if they're attacked by EAB, and then selecting the most resistant phenotypes of that trial and breeding them together to eventually get at a fairly hardy phenotype of the various ash species that can cope with EAB or for some reason is less attractive to EAB. Now, this is many years out, and this takes a lot of time to put together and test and validate, but this is one of the hopes that in the long run, say the next 20 years, we can start to identify a group of these resistant phenotypes and potentially introduce them both on the landscape in a more kind of forestry operational setting, but also then make them available for commercial applications and retail nurseries and such. So that's a big part of this is looking into the future, recognizing that ash is so important on the landscape. It comprises roughly 8% of the forest trees we have, 20% of the trees we have in the urban environment, and that there's a big void to fill. And if we can promote that by doing some of these proactive approaches, that would really be helpful.
Jim in Appleton, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I wanted to just mention our experience with having trees treated. We got three ash trees that we planted 37 years ago when we built the house, and they're roughly 60 feet tall, I'm guessing. My mother-in-law gave us the money for the trees, so there's great emotional attachment to them. When we started about 6 or 7 years ago having them treated, Appleton has been decimated by the ash borer, and they just had a contractor come in, and I think they removed 1,400 trees from the boulevard. And these trees have remained healthy. And so it's roughly $1,000 every 2 years, a little bit more than that, to have them treated. So it's roughly $11 a week to have those trees in the backyard. And I think that's cheap money. So I would strongly encourage that if you have healthy trees to start, that you continue to have them treated.
Jim, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad to know your trees are there. Paul?
Yeah, no, that's a good point, Jim. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, Jim sounds like an advocate and a believer in using the insecticide treatment. And I think that makes a lot of sense, again, buffering up against the removal costs. And the other thing with this whole EAB post, this post-mortality population size, is that once the EAB is largely moved through an area, the expectation is that these retreatments, this isn't known for sure yet, and this is going to depend on the local situation of EAB pest pressure in an area, but once it's moved through an area, the retreatment cycles could potentially be pushed out to not every 2 or 3 years, but potentially 4, 5, or 6 years, because there's just so much, many fewer EAB in that area, and thus the tree may not need such high levels and high doses of protection to make it through the EAB pressure. So there is that too. We might be able to get to an area in time where we don't have to retreat so often, and we can still keep those trees healthy.
Margo in Hancock has a different kind of question. Hi, Margo.
Hi. I am wondering if you could discuss oak wilt. I live in central Wisconsin. Our soil is very sandy, and we're a pine area, but we do have oak. I've got a massive oak tree in my backyard, and I just noticed that the crown has some dead branches on it. I really don't have other oak trees surrounding this one, but I know a lot of folks in my area have lost whole sections of trees due to oak wilt.
Yeah, Margo, thanks for the question. It's that time of the year where my phone pretty much rings off the hook with oak wilt questions, because it's at this time of the year when the symptoms are showing most prominently. And what we tend to see with oak wilt is rapid loss of leaves. Now, you mentioned your oak has, you know, a couple of dead branches. It could be oak wilt, but generally what we're seeing, if we're seeing oak wilt in that tree, is we're seeing the leaves fall from the tree within a matter of 3 to 6 weeks very quickly. The leaves starting to drop off, and it's not just in one or a couple of the branches, it's across the whole crown. When we see that, we're really thinking about oak wilt if it's happening during this time of year. So what I would recommend is to probably have one of the local arborists take a look at the tree and see if they might be able to provide you a diagnosis. The other thing you could do if you want to do it on your own is to go onto the Wisconsin DNR's website and go to the Forest Health page and look at our fact sheets about oak wilt. We've got a couple of different fact sheets, one on the disease, biology, and symptoms, as well as one on management. Take a look at some of those pictures and see if what you're seeing in your tree resembles some of those images and descriptions on those fact sheets. And if you think it does, it may pay to contact an arborist quite quickly to see what your options are. Generally, when it starts to infect a red oak tree, like I'm guessing you have a red oak, there's really no way of saving it. The fungus moves so quickly through the vascular system and kills trees at a rate that's just not really we can't really react quickly enough with any kind of fungicide treatments. But if you have other oaks in the area, that's where we want to find it and identify it quickly to potentially prevent it from spreading outward to yet other oaks in that site.
Yeah. Rick in De Pere emailed, has two dying ash trees in the backyard due to EAB. If he cuts them down, can he keep the wood for firewood, or does he need to get rid of the wood?
No, we had a state quarantine for a while, Larry, and that dictated a little bit about how firewood and other types of wood transport was required. But that quarantine was lifted around 2020. 2022. And so at this point, no, there's no restriction in keeping that wood on your property. If it is going to be moved, recommend contacting the local municipality to determine if there's any restrictions on disposal sites, where they recommend wood be brought. based on the municipality's requirements or policies, if they have any. But local use is really the best option. Although EAB is now in all counties, it's best to try to keep wood local so we don't promote any further advancement there.
Well, I tell you what, we have lots of questions here, Paul, that we haven't covered, and I'm sorry we can't get to them, but I thank you so much, and hopefully we can get you back more quickly and get you on to talk about those other tree diseases as well. Paul Segan, DNR Forest Health Specialist, works out of Hayward. We'll get him back as quickly as we can to talk some more about trees. Always great to have you listening in, and a big thanks to Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our producers, technical director Jeff Robbins and Lee Rayburn, and our executive director Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots in store here on WPR News.